now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my very special guest is Chuck Ocelli of Ocelli.com, and he also is the host of the very fine podcast, The Ocelli Effect, of which many moons ago I was once a guest, had a delightful time, informative discussion Chuck and I had, and I'm really excited about getting him on the Cosmic Switchboard Show. We'll have all of Chuck's link information and his podcast information on our website. So without any further ado, Chuck Ocelli, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Look, I really appreciate you inviting me, James. I do recall, yes, it is a bit further back in my memory because I do a show 5 nights a week, in case people don't know that. And it is live, generally speaking, but many shows ago, you were on with me and I really enjoyed it. I kind of found it odd that you and I didn't get back together much sooner than this. Because it was a pleasant conversation, and I really enjoyed actually learning from you, which is a rare thing after, you know, more than 1,500 podcasts, okay? You start to not learn so much from some people, but with you, it was great. I also produce a couple of shows there because my website operates as a miniature kind of network. So I'm a producer also. I run my show. I work with, say, Aaron Franz from The Age of Transitions, theageoftransitions.com. He's an interesting author and guy who, quite frankly, James, I would suggest you speak with Aaron if you haven't already.
Oh, I'd love to. Yeah, please introduce me.
Yeah, he wrote the book, The Scientific Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, if I didn't just screw up the title. And it's about transhumanism, and I think you two would have a really interesting discussion.
Wow.
I also produce Pierce Redman, who is on hiatus at the moment, Porkins Policy Radio, Dylan Wade's Popcorn Politics, and a couple other people too, but very few. It's a very small select group, and it's kind of like a mini network over there at Ocelli.com. So I wanted to get that all in, along with the fact that I do the 5-night-a-week show myself. So I'm doing a lot over there, just so you know.
Well, thanks for pumping out all that information. Now, you know, what's going on? We knew this day was going to come, Chuck. We knew at some point the powers that be were going to pull off some kind of stunt that would kind of bind the entire planet into this fear craze mode where they can begin, the controllers begin to enact all these statutes and edicts and laws. And now it's reached the point of absurdity. You know, like yourself, we talked about this before the show. I believe there's something out there. I believe that it's being overhyped. I believe that the incidence rate of infection is much lower than they're saying, infinitesimal, as a matter of fact, but they keep hyping and overinflating the deaths in order to justify all of this draconian stuff that's going on. So from your perspective, and also from your perspective as a Georgian in the great state of Georgia, and also what you see with this latest development in Minneapolis and how it's spreading around the different parts of the country now. So please, Chuck, the floor is yours.
Well, okay. Let us begin from the beginning, right? Before the virus became viral, pardon the pun, it seems to me as though we had an economic circumstance where there was an artificial propping up of the system anyway that really should have crashed a little bit ago. We've seen the boom and busts over and over again economically. Now, look, I'm not claiming to be an expert on this, but I do speak to people who know about it and constantly, in fact, and not just the stock market, mind you, but also the much ignored circumstances where there has been a culture of sort of squeezing the workers, even in the Western world, and the continuous exploitation of individuals, which is out there for profit. Say, let's talk about China for a second. You know, when I knew things about what was going on over there in manufacturing and also Walmart and how it is they benefited from it and other corporations, the larger animals on the planet that, you know, are supposedly people, according to Citizens United, it is kind of an untenable circumstance. You can't have exponential growth without the boom and bust cycle. And we've witnessed it over and over again. Now, for some time here, we have witnessed a bust that just didn't seem to happen. Although you were still getting squeezed on the ground if you were a regular individual who might have been trying to, survive in the current paradigm. But interesting thing is the economic situation starts to crash, and then this virus becomes the marquee. And it has been now for months that this is the big threat on the planet. We are counting the dead. We are being reverent about them. And look, I am not trying to be cruel to anybody who's lost anybody. I am not trying to be cruel to the individuals who have to live through losing someone in a inordinate time period too soon, all of that. It is real. Okay. There is something to this, but let us put it in context. The opioid epidemic, which, you know, nobody wants to think of as a disease or anything like that, and maybe it isn't, but the body count is very large and has been going on for years, not months. Didn't come out of China exactly, but came out of what? The great big pharma organizations that pumped out this stuff and did what they did, plus, you know, the black market heroin and all that, which was amped up, of course, post September 11th. You have a lot of things at play here that I could talk about, but that's not even the major issue. Let's just deal with the body count. When you're talking about the amount of people that are dying on a daily basis who are dying as a direct result of, let's call it the disproportionately non-empathetic corporate culture that has produced this epidemic, no big deal. The body counts are not alarming to the public. Why? They're not being pushed at them by the mainstream media. So you say, well, Chuck, that's not a disease. Fine. Tell you what, let's talk about other diseases. They kill people. Lots of things like air pollution kill people every year one way or another. And you know what? The body count is much higher than even this 101,000 plateau that we have allegedly reached as of today, according to the CDC and all those other people who, by the way, just want to let you know something, that despite the fact that I have been vehemently attempting to research and most strenuously putting my effort in to find out about what has changed in the suicide rate during the grand lockdown, trying to collect those numbers from the CDC, the national collection databases of all sorts, and trying to compare them to what the states are reporting individually, I have incoherent data sets. I can't sort that out. I'm not sure if anybody can. There are factors that go into that. But nobody's talking about that either, James. See, that could be a disease, but of course that would be a mental health issue and perhaps it's being encouraged and so on and so forth. But then again, let's get back to the disease of the day. COVID-19. Okay, fine. I do not believe it is a hoax. I do not believe it is a nothing. But in context, is it killing more people than, well, say other diseases which emerge on a seasonal basis? Is it doing the damage that would have required one third of the planet? Because people seem to think that the whole world was shut down. No, but one third of the planet was immediately put on lockdown over the course of a couple of weeks. And it's fascinating to me that that has never happened before. The normalization, which, again, we could witness in parts of Asia where people have been wearing the masks ever since the last alleged pandemic was such a big deal regarding SARS, right? Which, again, I don't remember very significant death counts or the death clock on TV or the continuous reporting or, oh, here's our special town hall and let us now fill an entire front page of what the New York Times with the names of the dead, so on and so forth. None of that happened. And does anybody actually know the numbers? Does anybody actually know which individuals might have been miscounted in the SARS epidemic? But see, again, they have certainly laid the groundwork here. SARS, MERS, swine flu, avian flu, various other things that are supposedly the invisible enemies that now justify what? The changes in behavior, the acceptance of vaccination, which, by the way, just keep your notes, James. You're gonna have fun with me in a minute, probably. I am not somebody who is in favor of vaccination. I have had three children. Two of them have been vaccinated, and my youngest you're not going to get a needle in him without prying him out of my cold, dead hands. All right. I have my reasons. You might want to discuss that. But still, I see the agenda being laid out where vaccination or non-vaccination may include, well, you know, may be included, I should say, in the process of either allowing you to trade or allowing you to have employment or allowing you personhood in certain places. Maybe it'll be used against you in renting. Maybe it'll be used against you so you can't even participate in commerce if you had any money left after the fact that, oh, wait, systematically, your jobs were affected. One in four people that were working, not working now, at least. And probably that count is not even fully accurate. Okay. Is all of this justified? Is the normalization of the mask justified? Is the agenda justified? Is the WHO working against us, for us, whatever? Lots of issues here, but the one thing I got to say is that it seems as though we're not having an appropriate reaction to any of this. And from the beginning, I have seen far too much complacency and far too much cooperation and compliance from the public. And very little questioning. Yes, indeed, they'll grab it and utilize it as a red versus blue political football. But is that the game that's really going on, James? I don't think so. I think we're being prepared. In fact, I don't even think that this is the grand lockdown that many people might have feared. I think this is just preparation. And the damage that has not even been fully felt in the United States yet. From just the actions taken allegedly in your best interest, once again, by the people who are allegedly serving you, by the people who are allegedly representing you, by the alleged experts who can't get their facts straight, because that's the miracle of this entire circumstance that we find ourselves in. Even among the establishment, there is no coherent narrative for what is happening, how people are dying, who's dying, what we need to do about it. Maybe, and by the way, they're even starting to float the idea that perhaps 6 feet of distance between each person is not enough now. That's based on old data. Nobody's got their facts straight. Even the people that say it's a hoax don't have their facts straight. It is a collage of factoids and really unproven narratives colliding with one another and creating what? Something where people can grab what it is they feel resonates with them out of the grab bag. And that's it. That's what everybody's running with. Whether you're one of these people who says you're absolutely, and by the way, shaming is already happening to individuals who are doing nothing but say not wearing a mask. You have the contradictions even in those behavior sets where there are individuals that, you know, are they're driving around in their cars by themselves with masks on. Who are you protecting in your car by yourself? Is your dog in the back seat? Wait a minute, I thought dogs couldn't get it. Oh no, there's been contradictions about how this could cross over to the species. Nobody's got the story straight. And the fact is that whether this is fabricated or it is a very real threat, no one has put forth the evidence to support nearly any of the extreme reactions here. What I suspect is that, as per usual, confusion is a useful weapon. Compliance is a useful position for the public to be in. And those that are really in power, not the middle managers who are telling you how to wash your hands, which, by the way, if you need a senator or a congressman to tell you how to wash your hands, I will volunteer to tie your shoes for you if you live near me. I mean, I really will, because I don't want you to hurt yourself. But back to the facts and back to what's actually happening here. These middle managers are not in charge of what the actual agenda is. And I do worry that there will be a ramping up of the use of people's private information, their medical information, their identification through universal ID. All these things are laying on the table just waiting for you to need to have a physical check before you walk into a building or even walk out of your house. And I'm wondering, because I've never seen any authoritarian individual who was in power not take advantage of circumstances like this. I'm wondering just how far this is going to go. And I'm really wondering exactly how far the next event is going to go. So there is my entire rundown on the virus. And makes sense to you, James?
Absolutely. And how they were able, I mean, it's so simple when you think about it, but how they deflected all the justification for all these draconian measures, blame it on the virus. And it's similar, Chuck, to how the Irish were wiped out, but they blame it on a fungus, on a blight that wiped out the potato crop, and that passed down into history, right? So it's something that they can point at and blame. Not too long ago was Al-Qaeda, take your shoes off, you slave, right? But now it's this fungus that could, rather this virus that could be anywhere. And the way that they the news presenters do it, Chuck, with these graphics of these big overgrown viruses floating around behind the news presenters, it just embeds into the minds of the viewers. And you're right, you know, the point and shriek has already started. Look at that unmasked villain there. Look at that person who's crowding too close to me. At that. It's what they've done is they've turned all these people into victim aggressors. And we've seen this before through cultural Marxism, victim identity politics. They've turned all these people into these pointers and shriekers because they've been empowered. It's a way for them to regain control. And they've been empowered by the government and the media to be these enforcers. And now, Chuck, they're talking about these tracer apps and these people they're going to recruit to go around being tracers, to go around tracking down those who are apparently infected.
Well, you know, that was the one thing missing from 1984, of course. And also, I combined Brave New World together with 1984 to see where this was all going a long time ago. One thing that was missed there is that the snitch society perspective is so key. And here's the funny part, right? Now, recently, just in days, the past few days, in fact, there is the opportunity to turn back to, unfortunately, what is a nonstop issue in this country, which has something to do with racism, sure. Absolutely, I don't deny it, but that is not the key fact. In my mind, the key factor here is that we have a police force, which is an occupying force, which does not behave in the serve and protect fashion, which is hostile to many, many parts of the population. The fact that, you know, occasionally we get films now, we get recordings of some of the abuses, means that, yeah, there's going to be a shared experience on occasion. But let us not forget that although this, again, is very real, is happening on the ground, is a thing, it is now going to be utilized by the media to get you to turn away from the analysis of what's actually gone on here recently. Okay? And I don't know how to square it all. I got to be honest with you. I see what's happening. But this is one of those parts of my life I've usually kind of predicted where we're going as far as, okay, so this is going to be the issue du jour. This is going to be the cause celebrity. This is going to be where the propaganda is going to go next. And this is what's going to keep us all at each other's throats instead of turning to the people who actually control the system, instead of actually holding other people responsible for what it is they've done. We're going to turn on each other, and here's the divide and conquer strategies. Well, racism, it's a quick and easy one to pick up in America for sure, and in the Western civilization, absolutely. It's a simple divisive issue. Sexism, the war of the sexes, kind of diluted now because of many, many different factors. But don't worry, they'll use that one if they can. They have convinced many an individual who has no privilege, no advantage in this society that they can still rise to a position where they can get at it and somehow they can also embody their ambitions to balance the previously imbalanced scales by doing what? Signing up for one of these political parties, picking a team. You want red? You want blue? Do you want to be on the side of people who look like you? You know, this is the same thing across the board. Not every dog hears every kind of dog whistle. Sometimes you got to try a couple. And this is how we're being herded, as far as I'm concerned. This is what is happening. The end game, a lot of possibilities. And the technological terror, excuse the expression, that they're about to really unleash is something that's been in the making for a long time. A lot of people complain about the surveillance. I don't carry a cell phone personally because I don't want that tracker on me. People are worried about being chipped. People are saying that, but you know what? We got to recognize that the technology is well beyond the chip already. That's the old stuff. Want to get into the new stuff? Biometrics, you're already marked. If they have your biometric signature, you're done. You don't need a chip. You can be tracked as long as the algorithm knows what it's looking for. And, of course, artificial intelligence has been a force multiplier in these things. And when you put it all on the table, you say to yourself, well, gee, maybe I can't go anywhere unless I comply with the vaccine. Maybe I can't go anywhere if I'm sick. If my temperature's up, I'm not allowed to enter a premises. I can't go and conduct business. I can't hold my job. Well, they've been doing this just by utilizing the open source social media where you're denied work, you're denied places to live, you're denied loans and everything else. And sometimes it's not based on the old school data sets. Sometimes it's based on the social media you volunteered yourself. The amazing thing, again, with Brave New World and with 1984 is both authors seem to fail to explain that without the snitch society, without the surrender of people's personal information by those people, the process might have never gotten started. And that's the fascinating thing. I think we've already opened Pandora's box here. I think there's a way to integrate this stuff. And it just seems to me as though, again, I'm not a technological expert, but just by reading the pronouncements about what it is they're capable of doing, what it is they're offering to do with these tracing programs, with these databases and everything else, it already seems to me as though game over. And you can be depersoned, you know, just because there's certain data entry that came in there. It doesn't even necessarily mean that you're sick or you're dangerous or whatever. I'm waiting for people to really be deemed dangerous because they say they won't wear a mask. They won't get the vaccination. They don't want, I'm telling you now, they're already drawing blood in certain parts of Georgia, door to door, apparently, according to some articles and some of what's happening. They haven't come to my town just yet, but apparently the CDC, in cooperation with the Georgia health departments, are already drawing blood under the auspices of seeking, the answer to the virus, right? The antibodies. They want to see if you've already been sick and maybe you have the antibodies. Perhaps you could help someone else. I don't trust it. And I can't see how it is so many people are laying down, complying, and acting as though giving into this is going to, at the end of the day, do anything but allow them to be more easily accessed and controlled by what is going on. Again, people are going to get sick. People are going to get sick from things that, generally speaking, were not foreseen, but maybe they are foreseen because if you take a look at Event 201 and that particular think tank exercise, which did involve Bill Gates, who is a key player in this, you take a look at stuff like that, seems to me as though they might have had an idea that something like this was happening. Or maybe it was already happening. And since the media didn't make a big deal out of it, again, it passed by like the deaths of other people had in these other circumstances I discussed earlier. So here we go again, right? We're here to help, but are you?
Well, you look at the first group of people that volunteered for these trials for the Moderna Corporation vaccine, and Moderna has emerged as one of the front runners to be the corporation that will provide the vaccinations. They've been funded by DARPA. That's on record. They've been funded by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And the scientist, the chief vaccine maker, is an Israeli guy named Dr. Zak, and he openly boasts about how the messenger RNA of this vaccine will rewrite and edit the genetic coding for everyone who receives the shot. So he's already talking about, boasting about, how the RNA is going to change people's DNA. So, and he says that that's all for the good. We just have to, you know, it's part of the plan. It'll make everyone feel better and all that. But the fact that DARPA, which is a weapons war-making thing heavily tied in with AI and all that, is involved in this. And, of course, Bill and Melinda Gates involved in this. It really just stinks to high heaven, Chuck. And it's a really weird Terminator, Matrix, equal parts Idiocracy and They Live scenario.
Oh, yeah. And look, I'm not going to give you a long answer this time, but Hollywood told us. How about the rebooted Planet of the Apes? How does that start again? Wait a minute. Doesn't it start because there's a vaccine? And, oh, it gets and jumps from the apes to us? And I don't know. Maybe I'm misremembering the new Planet of the Apes. But seems to me as though we've been told 100 times, 12 monkeys, Terminator universe. Sure, the machines turn against us because they decide that maybe we're the problem. And maybe we are. But I'm not going to hand the sword of Damocles to hang over our heads willingly. I don't understand how people are not even questioning any of this. In fact, I see the majority of the population, again, could be because I'm in Georgia. And by the way, I'll get to the Ahmaud Arbery thing later. But even in Georgia here, right, you would think that because there's this reputation about, you know, possibly there's a bit of a rebellious streak here and everything else. All I see is compliance. That I think the people here are going to beg for the vaccine and are going to demonize people who don't take it, regardless of how fast they roll it out, how it was tested, or if anybody has any clue about what the long-term ramifications of it could be, because they already accept plenty of non-long-term efficacy studied, you know, studied for its efficacy vaccines already for the children. They already take that, no problem. And they already demonize, you know, I mentioned before, my son. A lot of kids are not allowed to play with him. You know why? Because he's not vaccinated. Okay. And it's a strange thing because, quite frankly, the only experience I've had is vaccinated kids shedding the diseases they've been vaccinated with, getting him a little sick. He's never been the carrier in the playgroups. But what do I know, right?
Well, everything is an inversion, Chuck. Up is down, left is right, black is white. Those people that do speak out about any topic under the sun that goes against the consensus narrative, the carefully framed narrative that we're constantly beat over the head with, well, the shriekers and pointers, the trolls, they just pop up on the Twitterverse, they just pop up in the corporate media, and they point and shriek at that dissenter. And what it's done is, and the way they throw around conspiracy theorists nowadays, Chuck, it's like clearly demonization. When you want to first isolate, no pun intended, and then ultimately destroy a given group, first you demonize them, you criticize them, you make them out to be the most evil beings under the sun relentlessly. It happened to the Serbs. It happened to, well, now who are the villains for some time now? Oh, white people in general. For the hardcore Stasi feminist, it's white male babies. They're the most evil kind of being. They even have a name for it. When a pregnant feminist mother finds out she's carrying a baby boy, they call it gender disappointment. They're disappointed, Chuck, that they're going to give birth to a boy. Chances are, poor baby's going to be aborted, right? So that's what they've done, is they've identified these populations they want to ruthlessly eliminate, and then they just hammer them relentlessly with criticism, all across the board. And now because of social media, it's, you know, a celebrity or a half celebrity can't make any kind of comment against the mainstream narrative without getting hammered into the ground.
Well, right. I mean, look, I work with a broadcaster named Maria Heller all the time. She's been around for many years. She's constantly being banned from social media platforms. Okay. Permanently banned on Twitter, by the way, Maria is. Why? Because she has actually called out when people do evil things. She's called them by proper names, in my estimation. But, you know, here we go. Let's stop dividing this. This idea that, you know, there are people that are given to the idea that the white male is the only demon on the planet. Got news for you. It seems to me as though if you dig through anybody's ethnicity, which ethnicity is a delusion anyway, but when we get into it, and that's my opinion, obviously, but you want to go with the ethnicity argument? Here's the thing. Find me a group of people that you can identify who hasn't done something awful under the guise of, well, let's talk about it. You know, going and colonizing another group of individuals, indigenous people that they abuse because they happen to occupy some other land. Now, certainly, the land we call America is drenched in the blood of individuals who were here to begin with. But name me a group of individuals that you want to identify as an ethnicity who haven't been brutal to others. And that includes Asian people. That includes, you know, what you would call Arabic people, any kind of European people, Americans, certainly. But even those who occupy parts of South America, hey, look, there were indigenous people there that got abused as well. Asians on Asian crime, really, if you want to take an objective look at history, that, you know, is usually not even mentioned here in the Western world because, well, there's reasons there. But let's not go into all of it. We are a warlike species. We are an abusive species, and we need to do better all across the spectrum of alleged ethnicities. And I don't find it any more or less, repulsive to discover the history of many people. So personally, look, I'm Irish and Sicilian. Of course, I'm American, but my ethnic roots are like that. So between the Romans and the Irish, I can certainly find, lots of examples of abuse, not only perpetrated on them, but perpetrated by them. Sicily, of course, means that my ethnicity, in a realistic sense, is the whole world anyway. And why? Because during the time that the Roman Empire kept rising and falling, which it did several times, a good staging place was Sicily, and just about every alleged ethnicity landed on that little island. So if you got Sicilian blood, you probably related to everybody. Okay. It was like the melting pot before the melting pot. But all of this is quite irrelevant. We all occupy the same planet. And when I take a look at what's happening, especially as we speak, James, you know, sure, Minnesota's burning this time, but I do recall in recent history, St. Louis burning. I do recall, you know, as a kid still dealing with the aftermath of what happened in the Northeast. I was born in 1972, learned to read in 1975, and they were still talking about places that were burned down not far from where I lived. This happens. And this happens, generally speaking, because there is an abuse of individuals one way or another. And then it is exacerbated by propaganda. It is brought about, you know, it brought about to the general public consciousness, sometimes by activists who mean well, sometimes by people who seek to utilize it as yet another handle to grab upon, you know, the majority of us. Which, by the way, there is virtually no difference. Again, this is my odd opinion. There's virtually no difference. Here's your factors. You have a lot more in common with somebody who's in your economic stratosphere than you do somebody who might actually have a similar skin tone to you. And the sooner that we learn that, I think we'll be a lot better off and we'll stop doing the job of the people that wish to control and utilize and commoditize us, you know, to make us into commodities, commoditize, don't know. Either way, to make us into commodities as opposed to men and women, it is to their advantage to make sure that we are constantly struggling with one another, throwing these labels at each other, picking sides and being on different teams. And I know it sounds like I'm repeating myself, but I can't help it. It's what I see over and over again. And interesting, the only time they seem to bring us together is when they want to normalize things that are about to come around, and they want to make sure that there is an acceptance and acquiescence among the population again. Notice there's no real care about the fact that, quite frankly, again, people who are black and brown in America are being disproportionately affected. Also, the senior population, disproportionately affected. Nobody's making separations now because they want to make sure that the fear goes to everybody. And that's what they're selling you more than anything else, is fear, so that you can embrace that and seek solutions from, guess who? Them.
Yes, and what's happening also is we talked about the Stasi effect and how this society has come in the full blossom, but we're also seeing, I'm kind of starting to see, I'm not going to say the cracks in the system, I'm not going to say the dam is about to burst, but I do feel, Chuck, that they're not as in control as they think they are. They're putting everything into place, but I think that there are some variables at work, and things are in such a flux state that even if they plan some of these things out, things may not work to their advantage. Like, for example, let's take the current situation in Minneapolis, another heinous cop murder, and these happening all over the place, all the time. People of all different ethnicities are being gunned down and brutalized for no reason by these cops. Now, the last thing that the controllers want is for a united front and have the United Front's wrath directed at the enforcement arm of the system, i.e. the police. They would rather direct that wrath against climate change deniers, against, you know, gun owners, against, you know, homeschoolers, take your pick, right? It's all the old atomization, fragmentation scenario. But now a lot of the wrath is being directed at the police, rightly so. It's been building up for a long time. This coming on the heels of two cops in particular, probably more by now, who've come forward and said they don't like what they see going on. They don't like the Constitution being trampled. Oh, by the way, they're ex-combat vets, and they've been fired, right? And they sent a message out to their fellow cops all across the land. You know what? You got to choose sides, because if this continues the way it's trending, you're going to find yourself going up against the entire armed populace of the United States. And they couldn't, you know, deal with the Viet Cong. They couldn't deal with the Taliban. They're not going to be able to deal with 100 million plus armed Americans.
No, and that's the fascinating part of this, is that, look, let us separate a couple of issues here. First of all, what we see on that video with Mr. Floyd, and his murder is an absolute atrocity, period. There is no justifying that. If you want to justify that, I'll tell you, James, I know you wouldn't, but if you did, this conversation's over. I have no reason to speak to you. I got to tell you, I can't even see wanting to talk to somebody who wants to justify what I saw in that video. Okay. But is it an uncommon occurrence? No, it's not. You're very correct. I'll tell you something, though. It's not new. Some people are like, hey, this is kind of a new thing. It's not new at all. And for the past few years, I've been trying to cover some of these stories. And I got to tell you, a lot of people don't want to hear it. But this one is a standout for sure. Now, this also comes on the heel again. The media is grabbing upon this, and they should, in this case, show that video and reveal what's happening and have an honest discussion about it. It's not just about race, although I do suspect that that those cops might have not treated him exactly the same. I think there might be an element here where this is racism, because I'll tell you, a human being that you're not attempting to kill, why would you do what this officer did. I mean, unless you're going to tell me that he's unaware that leaning, you know, his body weight on somebody's neck, which, by the way, I've taken time to look at that video very closely, and he is at different times leaning in more and more on this guy's neck, who is clearly compliant at the time, who, again, even if you do have a bit of a dangerous job and you got to deal with some people who are going to do combat with you, there is no excuse for what I'm seeing here. And there's also no excuse, by the way, because four of them were fired, and I think rightfully so. The federal charges, if there is anything honest in the declaration that was given at the press conference a little bit before you and I started talking, this discussion about, you know, those who are empowered in their office and then fail to do something about a situation like this are also liable and are to be punished under federal law. If that's the case, then you know what? Let the system actually do the right thing here. Problem is that in the Eric Garner case, which I know some people would look back on and maybe have disputes about, I don't. I see that as very similar to this. And indeed, the media has made the point that both men said they could not breathe. But also in the Fernando Castillo case, where an individual was complying, had a legal right to a firearm, and was murdered also. You know, here we go again. There is a problem here. It is systemic. It is partially based in racism, but there is a bigger systemic issue here. And I don't want to discount the racial aspect of it, but I also would like to say that it is very convenient for those that need to change the narrative right now. Now, I know it's not very convenient if you're in Minneapolis right at this moment, because there is a backlash here. And that will carry the day. The backlash will carry the day, will be the sentiment, will be the meme, will be the means by which pay attention to this so that you don't pay attention to that. And generally speaking, it will be utilized to stoke up even further racial tensions, because obviously people whose properties, businesses, which probably weren't surviving too well to begin with, and everything else are going to be destroyed, endangered. Other people are going to be hurt here. And you know what? A lot of those people have nothing to do with the system that produced a guy who thinks it's a good idea to put his knee on the back of somebody's neck.
There's already indications that there are Asian provocateurs going around burning places up and doing that whole thing. It's like, you know, on the one hand, here's a chance for people to unite against something that they can all unite against, i.e. the oppression and all that. On the other hand, here's an opportunity for the Rahm Emanuel types, okay, to say, okay, let's turn it into a race war issue. Let's turn it into a burn down, you know, the city center issue, like what happened in post Rodney King, et cetera, et cetera. So it's things are getting kind of out of hand. Can they maintain control the way they want to? Can the ball for once bounce in our direction, Chuck? You know what I mean? It's like something just good happens for the forces of standing up to evil, you know, for a change. Anyhow, we reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest, Chuck Ocelli. If you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. In the first segment, you heard our very special guest, Chuck Ocelli, talk about the manifold changes that are going on in our world today, the draconian lockdown, the snitch society that's been created. We're just getting started. So, Chuck, welcome back to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Well, you know, James, once again, I want to thank you because this is really unique for me to be the guest on a show lately. I've done a lot of guest spots, but I really appreciate it when I'm invited. And quite frankly, I have a lot of respect for the work you've done in the past. I wasn't aware that you had a show going recently, I got to be honest, but I'm very glad that you do, and very happy to be here. Thanks again.
Before we finished the first segment, we were talking about the police brutality, and You know, it goes back to the same old thing, Chuck. You know, the Israeli-trained cops, the ADL spending bazillions of dollars sending hordes of American cops and deputy sheriffs to Israel for training. The border, which all the Trumpsters just go crazy about, oh, the wall. Much of the security apparatus behind that is Israeli in nature. So it's not the way I perceive it, Chuck. It's not so much keeping the immigrants out. It was always the legal immigration. It wasn't the illegal immigration, some poor souls trying to sneak across the Sonoran Valley 120 degrees outside. It was the mass legal immigration coming up from Latin America and elsewhere that was the problem. The wall is not going to stop them from coming in. So I always saw the wall as keeping Americans in, not so much keeping people out. And so we have this scenario where domestically they're doing their level best to create this lockdown syndrome, Chuck. But also, let's step back a little bit from a geopolitical standpoint, because it seems to me, as crazy as it seems, maybe they really want to stir up a conflict with Iran. Maybe they really want to stir up a conflict with China. Maybe that's part of the end game. And one quick thing before I let you run with it, Chuck. One of the reasons why I believe there's something to this contagion is the Iranians were hit hard by it. They were having high-level ministers go down and die from this stuff. And the fact that they've been in the crosshairs of the Anglo-Zionists for so long, they have no vested interest in going along with a hoax, Chuck. They're not going to raise their hand and say, oh, yeah, we're being hit by this contagion, and let's lock everyone down and destroy the world economy. They've got nothing to gain from that. And to this day, their tankers that they're sending from Iran to another embattled country, Venezuela, you know, the U.S. Navy is threatening to board their ships on the high seas under the guise of drug interdiction and you know, counterterrorism. So anyhow, it's kind of like a big open-ended question, but what are your thoughts on all that?
Well, that is a significant part of what I'm seeing happening. Now, the Iranian thing comes and goes, right? I think there was an attempt. Now here I go. I know I'm going into tinfoil hat land, according to some people, but I don't care. It's what I see. There was an attempt just a short time ago with the assassination of a Iranian general, right? And we saw that sort of amped up and kind of offered out to the public as, hey, look, here's the next stage of the war of terror. And I did mean to say the war of terror, not on it. Because how do you have a war against an asymmetrical warfare technique? But anyway, thing is, there was an attempt to sell it, and I don't think they could sell it. So you got to put that back on the shelf. But what do we always have? We have the conflict with the Chinese, which is realistic, according to most mainstream people that want to talk about geopolitics, right? Because there's been this long-standing issue about how they were really beating us on the world stage with the economy, right? They're making deals. We're stepping outside of deals. They are exploiting the African continent. We are not currently. Whoops, one place we're not really doing so well with the military-industrial complex and the spread of that ubiquitous war machine of ours that's in almost every country somehow, some way. And the war in Afghanistan, which never ended, although most people have fallen asleep on and forgotten about, you know, the non-exit strategy, right? So let's try and put it in context. This issue with China and now the blame game that's going on, which may indeed be valid to some degree, is again going to be utilized to demonize them. And let's see if we can offer the American public the truly insanely suicidal possibility of trying to clash directly with China. Let's see if we can do that. And by the way, nobody with a blue or red tie is immune from the blame on this one. I think that is a propaganda effort. I think they're testing it. I think they're beta testing it to see if, you know, maybe the people will accept the conflict. Because one thing they don't want to have is a war that's not somewhat justified among the population. That doesn't go well for the people that really get rich off of it, the war profiteers that still exist, the really truly Keynesian concept of the military industrial complex and how it has become an economic jobs program, really for Americana. And one of the few things that we do export constantly and quite successfully, and the we here, I'm using the we because I got to simplify things, but you know, I got nothing to do with it. And the majority of people I know have nothing to do with it. Although there are individuals whose livelihoods do depend on it, whether they know that that's exactly what their livelihoods depend on or not, another issue. But as we watch this economic shakeup, one wonders, how is the military-industrial complex faring during this time? I know that Uber Eats and, well, let's see, our friends over at DoorDash and those kind of companies, Grubhub and all that, their stocks are not faring well, even though a lot of people are supposed to be locked in their homes and, hey, they should be ordering food. Oh, wait, there's a problem. A lot of them don't have money. Even with the $1,200 stimulus that they sent out and the thing they're trying to dangle, which I'm not sure if it's going to become a thing, but even if it does, this weird sort of acceptance recently of UBI, you know, there's just a lot to this. When you try and lay these sort of, I don't know, antiquated views about how it is a war normally gets started with the propaganda efforts, the demonization, sometimes the dehumanization of alleged those people, other people. It's really interesting to put that in context with what you talked about before regarding immigration. Because here's the thing, these rich people, these very, very seriously well-endowed individuals who are in the corporate world, whether it is known or not, they depend on a lot of those illegals and questionable immigrants that they supposedly don't want to have come into the country. They certainly do. And that is part of the economic infrastructure of this country that nobody wants to talk about. It's part of the reality. Now, there's always problems with the immigration and, you know, acceptance, the absorbing aspect of, well, the melting pot and each culture that comes here one way or another being exploited for a time period, coming in significant numbers and then being acclimated to the alleged American culture. It happens. And again, going back to my own ancestry, it's not as though there wasn't difficulty with the Irish coming into this country. It's not as though there wasn't difficult with the, you know, the immigrants who were my grandparents also that came here from Italy. A lot of them, sure, they built your cities, but they were equally exploited as they came and became, well, part of all this, right? Today, you don't necessarily think of somebody like me as, you know, the grandchild of an immigrant, therefore, whatever. But you know, again, it happened before my people got here. It happened before a lot of other people got here. It happened when Asians came to the West Coast, for sure. It happened various times on the East Coast as New York City absorbed every single wave, whether it was my ancestors or the Asian who came before or the Portuguese population that wound up in the Northeast or, you know, et cetera, and so on ad nauseum. That all the way up to Indian and Pakistani immigrants who came in a wave for a minute there. It always happens. But the divisive nature of it and the use of policies, which again, with police, notice how the word policy and police are very similar. They're policy enforcers. When people talk about the training in Israel, I almost cringe. And you know why? Because, yeah, that's true. But you know what else is true is a lot of these people have next to no training. They do know law that they are alleged law enforcement. They don't even know law. They don't know the law. They don't know the Constitution. Yeah, as a matter of fact, if you mention this demonized document, the Constitution, to some of them, that will guarantee you an ass kicking. I hate to put it that way, but I got to speak from experience. Not a good idea to bring it up to people who are ill-informed. You know, when people don't know about things and they're afraid of them, they often react violently. And that's the thing about the uninformed public, the uninformed policy enforcers. I mean, you know, it's very difficult to even find sheriffs. By the way, there's more to law enforcement than your local police. you know, it's sometimes even hard to find sheriffs who understand the constitution of the state in which they are allegedly being officers to enforce that document. And each state has its own constitution, but also they don't really know the U.S. Constitution. Now, there are some people that argue that those are irrelevant documents. And by the way, Chuck, you know, you're not living in a place where that counts anymore. And I don't argue with you too much, but I don't know. I had this crazy notion when I was a kid that this was America as described in my history books, as described in my civics classes. And, you know, the real world doesn't exactly react that way. So there's a lot to this. And again, the geopolitical ramifications and the local ramifications of this uptick of control, this uptick of militarization of the police, which again, you know, was a phrase that was only in the realm of the tin hat foil people up until a couple of years ago. Matter of fact, I think it was Michael Brown's murder that finally made that term acceptable in the mainstream media. But previous to that, it was crazy people like you and me that talked about that concept. And here we are with black uniforms, with automatic weapons, with armored personnel carriers, with police who are treating the public as though they are the enemy as they enforce policies. This is a problem. But again, it is going to be picked up upon by those who make problems their profit. And that is really, honestly, a lot of media outlets that are going to just make this the latest piece of fear porn that they're going to sell on a 24-hour news cycle. It's like an infomercial for fear, and it's there for you every single day and every hour. And by the way, if you fall asleep, it'll be there when you wake up too. And
that's for sure.
Yeah.
One time, just as a joke, my wife and I, we turned the TV on, and it was already programmed to a news channel. Literally the first word we heard when the TV came on was coronavirus. So there's no getting away from it.